the once-a-year Indianapolis 500 is the largest single sports event in the world and still growing. Growing because it has all the ingredients of a great sports classic. Action, competition, suspense, excitement, and yes, there is one more ingredient. Chance. A year's work, $1 million design, or a lifetime of automotive ingenuity hang in the balance of racing luck. To the 70-odd entries seeking a place in the 33-car starting field of the 500, the lottery officially begins with the drawing the day before time trials. Driver, mechanic, or car owner picks his position in the qualification lineup. Because of the uncertainties of weather, some think the timing of the attempt is critical, and some don't.
Doesn't really matter.
I hope.
Are you going to work?
I'm out of coming out tomorrow and not have an engine in your car.
I'll put my own off in
the car. How you running?
One of the biggest qualification crowds in history, estimated at more than 250,000, is on hand at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the first day of time trials. Although there's a forecast of showers, the combination of cool temperatures, moist air, and low wind is ideal for high-speed running. Today's weather is what a race driver would order if he had his choice. Everything seems right for the first 170-mile-per-hour lap in Speedway history. Neither Maston Gregory nor Bob Hurt, who drew first and second qualification spots, has been able to get anything like the speed needed out of his car to qualify. So the first shot at the 170-mile barrier goes to Graham Hill. Top speed for number 70 in practice was 169.5 after an off-again, on-again month for the wedge-shaped turbines.
Graham Hill, first official qualifying attempt. And here it is, the fastest qualification run in the history of the Indianapolis 500. 171.208.
In the clamor over Hill and the turbine, Lloyd Ruby's qualification, 3.5 miles per hour off the pace, goes almost unnoticed. Roger McCluskey's happy to qualify at nearly 167. Before Graham Hill's run, Bobby Unser, in his turbocharged offie, was the man to beat for the pole position. 2 days ago, in practice, he became the first driver to break the 170-mile-per-hour barrier. By the luck of the draw, Hill qualified first. Now, the pressure is on Unser.
It's Bobby Unser onto the track, and let's give him a great send-off.
The hopes of the piston engine world are riding with Bobby.
There it is. And the speed, 100.
Unser's four-lap speed of 169.5 breaks all qualification records, except Graham Hill's. Unser's car owner, Bob Wilkie's disappointment is matched by that of A.J. Foyt in his rear engine Ford. A.J. is 4.5 miles per hour off the pace. Dan Gurney, running his own design stock block Ford, qualifies just 0.4 seconds slower than Foyt. Now that the car has qualified respectively on the first day, Gurney and crew can concentrate on the race. Rookie Jim Malloy, the seventh qualifier, settles for a speed of 165.
Our first rookie in the field.
In a 170-mile-per-hour practice run, Joe Leonard was not satisfied with the way number 60 turbine handled. Parnelli Jones turned down a sister wedge because, as he said, I won't race in a car I can't win with.
He got it, Joey Leonard. 171.953. Here he comes down that straightaway to pick up that checkered flag, and there it is.
If the crowd thought Hill was hot, Leonard is even hotter as he takes the pole away from his teammate. Remaining 25 positions goes on. Wally Dallenbach qualifies the Valvoline Special as the skies begin to darken. His last lap was identical with Dan Gurney's, and his four-lap total just a shade slower. Gurney, Foyt, and McCluskey are good company for any driver to be with. Leroy Yarbrough was slated to drive the third turbine. When Art Pollard became available, Leroy was eased out. What the turbine team was looking for was an all-turbine first row. They don't get it. But Art Pollard was fast enough to put number 20 between Gurney and Dallenbach. Mario Andretti. For the last 2 years, he has broken all qualification records at the Speedway. This year, Mario has put his faith in a turbocharged Ford, a massive 675 horsepower against the Offie's 625. Qualifying a tenth of a second faster than Lloyd Ruby, Mario edges Ruby out of fourth starting spot as rain ends the first day of qualification. And it keeps on raining. This has been a month in which 2 out of 3 hours of available track time have been washed out. With the track closed, garages are open for business, and crews are working overtime. But with day after day of bad weather, their efforts have gone virtually untested. 50 cars are scrambling for the remaining 17 spots. And mechanics need all the feedback from drivers they can get. When a mechanic does things right, a driver has confidence in his car and can push it harder. But there's more than speed at stake. It costs about $100,000 to bring a car to Indianapolis. A car that has been a year in the building. In competition, peak performance must be matched by endurance. A race car has to travel hard and long. Everything a mechanic chooses to go on or in a race car must do the job. But the job starts in the garages and gets done on the track. With every break in the weather, the fueling stations in Gasoline Alley find themselves with plenty of customers. These service stations stand by every hour of every day to give crews what they want, when they want it. Adjusted and readjusted, tuned and polished, now it's time to find out what they can do. It's roll out and go. But crews have to make the most of whatever track time they get. It's anybody's guess as to what it will take to get in the race. For many of those lucky enough to qualify the first weekend, getting in the race didn't solve all their problems either. For those in or out, hurry up and wait is the name of the game. On May 25th, the first day of the second weekend of qualifications, the field grew to 25. Threatening weather held off. A lucky break for Dennis Hulme, the 1967 Grand Prix driving champion who had to qualify today or not at all. He has a date to race in Europe 12 hours from now and won't return to Indianapolis until after qualification is over. The genial Hulme finds time to sign an autograph on the run. Accept congratulations from Roger McCluskey, who is waiting for a few precious moments of practice. And then it's off to Monte Carlo, a 9,000-mile round trip there and back before the May 30th Classic. The second weekend of qualifications is a carbon copy of the first. One day of running, second and last day of time trials cut short by rain. On May 27th, 1968, in an unprecedented move by track officials, qualifications are extended to a full fifth day, but only one attempt per car. There are still 7 positions to fill. Jim Hurtubise, the only man to bring a front-engine coffee roadster to Indy, is finally ready. The popular Hurt has gone through three engines and innumerable changes in his fight against bad luck and bad weather. Hurtubise qualifies the Pepsi Frito-Lay Special at 162.2 miles per hour. Before time trials, it was estimated that it would take a speed of 164 to make the starting field. What every crew wants is the time to try. Even if they blow it, at least they've made the attempt. Mechanics like Bill Findlay and George Salley, with 20 years or more in racing, keep coming back again and again, always with the hope of getting in the race so that one day may be their day. Bill Findlay sums up his feelings.
This morning we were on 63, easy, and confident of 64, but the Schoaf is a rookie and probably as nervous as I am. So anything we can get over 60, we'll flat be happy with.
And happy they are, with a four-lap total just a tenth of a second slower than Hurtubise. It took 7 hours to qualify seven cars, but the field for the 52nd 500 by the end of this extra day is filled. The 33-car average tops last year's with a record 164.948. Despite the widest spread between the fastest and slowest cars since 1946, all's right with the world for those who made the race. This is the day, the opening of round two at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway of the piston versus turbine fight. In the stands, 300,000 fans to cheer on the battle. Track president Tony Holman signals a start.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
When the field moves out on the parade lap, questions that have been raised all month will move closer to their answers. Will the turbocharged Offie live up to its promise? Will the rear engine Ford make it four in a row with its three-time winner? And the one-of-a-kind Gurney stock block Ford, Hurtubise's front engine Offie, Rince Repco Brabham. Are we in for a surprise? The turbines, will they run away with the race based on their fantastic qualification speeds?
The pace quickens. The pole car.
The pace car pulls off the track, and Hill drops back. Into the first turn, it's Turbine, Offie, Ford, Offie, Ford, Turbine.
200 laps to go to the finish. 200 laps to go to the finish. Two letters leading, going down the back stretch. This is lap number one.
The field strings out. Andretti brings his turbocharged Ford into the pits after one lap. Mario is Indy's hard luck driver. In 4 years, he's only finished the race once. Leonard's first, Unser second, with McCluskey, Ruby, John Cock, and Hill in the next four positions. Jim Hurtubise takes it hard. The only front-engine Offie in the race is out. Lap eight coming up, and Unser charges Leonard and passes him. In time trials, Unser was 2 miles per hour slower than Leonard. Is Leonard playing it cool, laying back, waiting for Unser to run himself out? Or is he trying to find out what Unser can do? It's Al Unser, Bobby's brother. He smashes the wall in his four-wheel drive turbocharged Ford, bringing out the first caution flag and the first set of pit stops. Dan Gurney leads the parade. The caution light slowing entering the field is too good an opportunity to miss if you can get in and out fast. Lloyd Ruby does. He improves his position with a quick 23-second stop. Jerry Grant is out of the race with transmission trouble. The 33 speediest service stations in the world each operate in about 10 feet by 5 feet of space along the pit wall in Indianapolis. Fuel is forced into two tanks, tires are checked. As soon as tanks are full, cars head back to the track. When the reshuffle in the pits is over, the same cars are leading the field, but in a different order. It's Ruby in number 25 offing. Unser in number 3 offing. Leonard in number 60 turbine. Hill in number 70 turbine. And Voigt in number 1 Ford. 200 miles into the race, and A.J. Voigt is through. He'll have to try again next year for his record-breaking fourth Indianapolis victory. Voigt has said he'll keep driving until he gets it. Unser's moving in on Ruby, and he passes to take the lead the second time. Second place as Unser sprints for daylight. Leonard can't let Unser run away and hide. Leonard moves in on Ruby in the short chute, passes him on the fourth turn, and takes off after Unser. Unser, Leonard, and Ruby with only 2 seconds separating all three cars. It's Offie, Turpin, Offie, and another Turpin. Graham Hill has moved up to fourth. And two Fords. Dan Gurney is fifth. Dennis Hulme, working his way through traffic, is sixth. Unser's crew gives him the sign. Second round of pit stops coming up. Unser keeps charging. And it's Joe Leonard who whistles into the pits. He'll have to hurry to hold position. Teammate Graham Hill hustles on the track as Andy Granatelli hustles Leonard out. Time lost in the pits must be made up racing. Uh-oh, spin out on the second turn. Graham Hill loses a wheel and smashes the wall in turbine number 70. That's a bad break for the turbines. Joe Leonard hasn't been able to run away with the race. Art Pollard hasn't been able to move up, and if the Turpins are running out of racing luck, they've had it. Bad luck for the Turpins is good luck for Unser in more ways than one. Bobby pits from first place in a slowdown caused by Hill's accident. Leonard and Ruby had to pit on the green. A fast pit stop will stretch Unser's lead. Gas is pumped in, tires are checked. The crew is busy, and a pit stop is no rest period for the driver. Unser revs the engine, changes his goggles, gets a quick drink of water, everything at once. With the track not yet clear for high-speed racing and quick action from his crew, it looks like number 3 Eagle Offie has it made. Andy Granatelli sees him coming and gives him the slowdown sign. An inside joke which Granatelli thoroughly enjoys. He waves Leonard on. What's this? Unser is slow. He seems to be having trouble getting up to speed. Leonard passes Unser to take first place. Unser's gear shift lever is broken. He's stuck in high gear. Even without me, the wedges will do it, is the word from Graham Hill to car owner Andy Granatelli. Hill, in turn, gets a word of encouragement from car builder Colin Chapman. Unser's up to speed, and he catches Leonard for the second time and passes. No doubt about it now, the turbo offie can outrace the turbine. fourth turn. Billy, a rookie this year, is the son of one of the all-time greats at the Speedway. Johnny Rutherford gets bumped by Jim McElreen. Rutherford's rear end and McElreen's front end show the effects of that tangle. Mike Mosley slides through the fourth turn after the accident, but keeps on driving. Kukovich, McElreen, and Mosley got back in the race. Only Rutherford's car was out. 200 miles to go, Unser has a solid lead, and the battle is now between Ruby and Leonard for second place. They charge down the backstretch. Ruby goes all the way to the inside and beats Leonard to the corner. Number 25 is a second turbocharged Oppie to take the measure of the turbine. The pro piston crowd's enthusiasm over another Oppie charge is not shared by the turbine team. With 100 miles to go, there are 16 cars still on the track and all trying to finish as high as they can. Bobby Unser charges into the pits for his last scheduled stop with a 50-second lead over Ruby and Leonard. But with only high gear, Unser's crew knows it'll have to get him out extra fast to give him time to get up to speed and still hold the lead. Bobby Unser's mother shares everyone's concern. Ruby and Leonard are heading into the short chute between turns 3 and 4. They're just a quarter of a lap behind Unser now. And Bobby Unser gets away in 26 seconds. He's slipping his clutch, trying everything to get a little more speed and keep his car from stalling. He heads out of the pits. Ruby and Leonard are on the straightaway. Unser stays low, out of traffic for safety's sake. Here comes Ruby. And Lloyd Ruby passes to take the lead. Joe Leonard passes to take second place. Bobby Unser has fallen from first to third. Leonard passes Ruby on the backstretch. The turbine's got the lead. That's Gurney behind him. Where's Ruby? Uh-oh, Ruby's in trouble. He's slowing down, heading into the pits. Smash up on the backstretch. Williams brings out the caution flag, just 16 laps from the end of the race. Positions are frozen. This might lock it up for Leonard and the turbines. With the track a mess and less than 16 laps to the checker, the race for positions may be over right now. Lloyd, Ruby, and crew are not giving up, though. With only 10 laps to go, the turbine team looks set. Even though the wreckage is clear, the field is still on the caution until the powder laid down to soak up the spilled oil is blown away. The field is bunched up behind Leonard, with only 5 cars between second place Bobby Unser and the lead turbine. The green flag signals all clear. Here they come, and Gurney passes Leonard. The turbine's slowing down. Joe Leonard is whistling to a stop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and there's Unser. Only 20 miles from the victory lane, Joe Leonard had every reason to believe he'd roll into it in glory. A tired, baffled driver walks back to his pit. Incredible! At the same moment, at the other end of the track, Art Pollard, in number 20 turbine, rolls to a silent stop. What's happened? Overheating, which showed up in the pit stops, may have been compounded by the slowdown laps. Joe Leonard tries to explain to Andy Granatelli, but what is there to say, except that you've done the best you can. One lap to go for Bobby Unser. The piston fans love it.
And going for his first 500-mile victory.
And Gurney is second, just short of being lapped by Unser as they take the final turn.
Moving into the area of the north end of the track, waiting to catch sight of me now. Here is the
white flag for Dan Gurney changes to the checker for Bobby Unser. Delight. The noisy Oppenhauser engine is back on top at the speedway. Bob Wilkie, the car owner, is back in the winner's circle after an absence of 6 years. The faith of Wilkie and chief mechanic Judd Phillips in the new turbocharged Oppie pays off. Dan Gurney's second place finish put his Eagle cars in first, second, and fourth positions.
Competitors all down through the pit area. He's got to stop and say hello to everybody.
Number three Eagle Oppie brought Bobby Unser, his car owner and crew, over $175,000 of a nearly $750,000 purse, and set a new 500 record of 152.882 miles per hour. Another turbocharged Oppie, driven by Mel Kenyon, finished third. Dennis Yulm, Gurney's teammate, was fourth. Lloyd Ruby brought his turbocharged Oppie in fifth. Sam Sessions was a happy rookie to finish ninth in his first Indianapolis 500. Bob Byth was a happy veteran to finish 11th. Is the comeback of the antique Oppie racing luck or the beginning of a new era? As one race ends, new designs are already forming in the minds of men who will build and race them again next year before the biggest crowds ever.
Start your engine.